Welcome back to another episode of the Fix Sports Podcast. I am Joseph Ward. I'm joined by Mr. Javard Grant, Sam Dixie, Doc Love. We here for another round to find out who is the greatest college football team of the past 40 years. You know, the greatest sports podcast ever in your life. Audio Shop Talk right in your ear hole going down in the South already. And if you don't know, now you know. And if you haven't known, that's because you've been living under a rock. But don't worry about it. You listen to this, your life can improve so much. You can now be cool. You can go outside and people going to like you. So you're welcome. Look at Doc shaking. Hey, this is your idea, Doc. You told me to say that, dog. Don't be shaking your head, dog.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't be shaking your head, dog. You told me to say, hey, man. Last time dude got mad at you talking about our mom. But thank y'all for joining in. So this is going to be the final round of our first round to figure out who is the greatest college football team of the past 40 years. Quick catch up for all of you who haven't been joining in with us. So we have 2019 LSU, 1995 Nebraska, 05 Texas, 01 Miami, 2013 FSU, 2018 Clemson, 09 Bama, 04 USC, 87 Miami, 99 FSU, 97 Michigan, 96 Florida, 08 Florida, 2012 Bama, 08 Oklahoma, and 2014 Ohio State. Those are our teams. We had 2019 LSU knock off 2014 Ohio State, 1995 Nebraska knocked off 08 Oklahoma, 2012 Alabama knocked off 05 Texas, 01 Miami knocked off 08 Florida, 2013 FSU knocked off 1996 Florida, and 2018 Clemson knocked off 1997 Michigan. Today's two matchups is 2009 Alabama versus 1999 FSU, in 2004 USC versus 1987 Miami. Fellas, is y'all ready for this, man?
Let's get it.
Man, y'all know how we do it. Hey, this is going to be good because we got 1987 Miami. How many of y'all was even alive? Who watching this? Who was alive in 1987, right? So we're going to jog back in our memory banks. But remember, we got a little structure to this. So we got our HBCU spotlight that we're going to start off with. Then we're going to get into our brackets. Then we have our weekly rant. And we're going to talk about this Doug Peterson benching Jalen Hurts when the game was close and all of the stuff surrounding that. Because it seemed kind of stupid to me. But as a Cowboy fan, I'm glad he did it. But just as a general football fan, I'm like, man, what the hell you doing, bro? So let's go ahead and jump into this HBCU spotlight there, shall? So you got an HBCU alumni, somebody that played for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He has an initiative called My Cleats, My Calls, My Cleats, where he gives back to the youth. So since its creation 5 years ago, My Calls, My Cleats have created a platform for many NFL players. They have used it to spread awareness to many different charitable foundations that they either created or supported. Two examples of those who worked hard to get the NFL, to get into the NFL and are now giving back to their communities are Quentin Bell and Ryan Smith. Quentin Bell, QB, is a graduate of Prairie View A&M University. He was drafted by then Oakland Raiders in the 2019 draft. The cleats are green and they say inspire change as they represent the organization Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Tampa Bay. The Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Tampa Bay is a youth organization driven to create and support one-on-one mentorship programs that ignite the power and promise of youth according to the Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Tampa Bay website. Ryan Smith, a cornerback from North Carolina Central University. I see you, Big Ryan. I see you, big dog. He was drafted in the fourth round by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2016. The cleats are purple and they say their names. They're representing the Dr. Carter G. Woodson African American Museum. The Dr. Carter G. Woodson African American Museum is dedicated to Dr. Woodson and also known as the Father of Black History Month. The museum's mission is to teach and promote the history of African Americans so that their legacy won't be forgotten. My Cause, My Cleats has been able to bring about change for those who are being represented by the athletes on the cleats. These players on the field are wearing their cleats to make statements for for what is most important to not only their lives, but the community as well. So we want to give a big shout out to the homeboys, Ryan Smith and Quentin Bell, really going down, man. Y'all put y'all hands together for Quentin Bell and Ryan Smith, really going down in the side. That's what I like to hear, man. That's what I like to hear. That's what this HBCU Spotlight is all about. Gentlemen giving back in that community in the best way they can. I know a lot of times people ask, well, it's, you got two types of people. You got people who want to help and don't know where to start. And then you got people who don't care about helping but want to criticize everything everybody doing. So what these gentlemen did, in my opinion, is they started where they knew. So I'm in the NFL. We got these cliques. We got all these initiatives that we can use. They started there. So for a lot of people, what are you good at? What you interested in? Start there. And for the other people, eh, we ain't worried about y'all. So one time for them. Now, I was searching through the internet yesterday, and I just learned this. FAMU actually just landed a SEC transfer. Did y'all know that?
No.
I ain't heard that.
Oh, see, Doc, you wore your shirt for good. Dog. See, it's hey, a purpose man. Behind your shirt, dog.
Sure, sure.
You know what I'm talking about? So FAMU has just picked up a big commitment from a former Power 5 player. Former JUCO star Tennessee defensive lineman Savion Williams has committed to play for Florida A&M. The Washington, D.C. native announced his decision via Twitter on Friday. He says, as much as this decision is for my future, this is also for my culture. I ain't doing it for the culture. You know, that's popular. For the culture?
For the culture.
As a fellow African-American, I think having more black athletes at HBCUs would benefit college football greatly and even the playing field. With that being said, thank you, Coach Willie Simmons, for believing in my talent. I am extremely grateful to say that I am committed to Florida A&M University. So Williams played high school football at Wise High School, home to many HBCU players in the CIAA. And in MEAC, he started his postgraduate career at Lackawanna Community College, where he rose to being ranked as number four as a four-star recruit by 24/7 Sports and the top-rated JUCO defensive lineman. Then he went on to sign with Tennessee in 2019. He played in seven games with Tennessee in 2019, registered seven tackles. He's 6'4", 304. He played in five games in 2020, but has a year left of eligibility, and he will spend that at FAMU. So FAMU got Savion Williams, and it's really going down. Hey, man, I don't know about y'all, but I'm excited about this year, black college football, specifically SWAC football. It's going down.
It's going to be interesting.
It's going down, yeah, man. So that's our HBCU Spotlight there, yeah. Got to get down there and talk about them players down there, especially in that bayou down there, Grambling, that Southern there, chef. They're killing them girls. Got yeah. Hey, man, y'all know y'all be watching Swamp People. I'm the king of the bayou down there. Got to kill them girls down there.
That's a Creole, bro.
Hey, man.
Got to shoot them.
Hey, shoot them, Elizabeth. Shoot them. Hey, man. Let's get into these brackets. 2009 Alabama versus 1999 Florida State. 2004 USC versus 1987 Miami. And it's going down. So we're starting with this 09 Bama versus 99 Florida State. So, well, let's kind of a little bit like we did last week. Let's look at strengths and weaknesses. Because at least this matchup, we remember both these teams, right? We was invested in football heavily around these times. So we into to these teams. So let's start with 2009 Alabama. If you had to say one or a couple strengths of Alabama, Javal, we're gonna start with you. What's some strengths that pop out to you for 2009 Alabama?
Well, this was the beginning of the Nick Saban era. And back then he was still running his style of offense, which was, you know, their power run game offense.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty good at that. And that this was the year they had Mark Ingram. I believe this was his Heisman year, right?
I think so.
And so
no. I don't know. Did he? Yeah. Because I think he came back the next year, his junior year, then he got drafted his junior year, I think.
Yeah, but that this was when they were at the height of their running game powers, and so, you know, they can line up and move the ball against anybody from the run game. So right off the top, that was their biggest strength.
That run game. Oh yeah. What about you, Doc?
To add to the run game, you got Julio out there. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
that's a double dose of headache for any defensive coordinator. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then they still had Lacy too.
Yeah.
Eddie Lacy. So that offense was
No. They had this Trent Richardson.
Trent Richardson?
Yeah,
Trent Richardson.
Eddie Lacy was a freshman though.
Okay.
I don't know how much he played on that team though, bro. I think he was on the team.
Hey, they were still stacked.
Right.
They were still stacked. And then Dante Hightower, I remember Dante Hightower on the defensive side. So, you know, that was a dog. So that team was, like I said, that team was stacked. I think, as a matter of fact, when JG said it, like, I think that team, this was the, like, at the start of that Saban era, like, this when they became more dangerous with their depth. You know what I mean? Like, their depth was deep. You know what I mean? Like, the second team could be on the field just as much as the first team. You all right, boy?
That shit went down the wrong hole. Yeah, them boys did have that depth. What about you, Sam? What you say was strength?
Oh man, I would have said to add on to go with the running game, the defense, like Gerard was saying, this is kind of that first incarnation of the what we know today as the Bama dynasty. So it was very much. It wasn't like the Bama that we have today where they're, you know, throwing, like you said, throwing the ball all over the place. They was going to run and play defense. Now, much similar to the Bama we got today, they still lock you up on defense. So this team was no different than any of these Nick Saban teams. Because one of the things that Nick Saban team going to have, they're going to be very disciplined on defense. And it's not going to be a lot of times where you have, like, coverage busts or getting a lot of big plays and stuff on them. So and that was one of the things they were really good at.
What year did Saban get to Bama?
I think 2008 was his first season.
Okay.
I think it was a little bit before that, bro. Because he was the coach when we went and saw that game in Jacksonville.
Let's look this thing up real quick. Like when he got to Bama,
I'm pretty sure he was the coach when we saw that game with Florida State and Alabama and Jacksonville.
2007.
Yeah, that was his first year.
Okay. Yeah. So I would say a strength for this team for me was their attitude, because they were out there bullying people on the field. And like you said, this is the start of when teams began to fear Alabama, because they were busting teams in the mouth on offense and on defense. Would have had Greg McElroy as a quarterback. Yeah, but like you say, Trent Richardson and Mark Ingram was a great 1-2 punch for Alabama that year. And then being able to throw the ball to Julio, plus all the beasts that they have on defense, who they had Rolando McClain, Dante Hightower, who else?
Mark, right.
Like they even had Rod Woodson on defense. Not
not B Rod Woodson.
Right.
A Rod.
But now, like, the attitude to me was a strength, because they came on the field like, all right, we're going to win.
Yeah.
And y'all finna catch this L, and we're going to – not only are we going to win, we're going to beat y'all ass for y'all catching this L, Debo style. So, all right, so going back to you, Javar, what would you say was a weakness for this 09 Bama?
Greg McElroy.
I think that was everybody's answer.
Greg McElroy was a solid college quarterback. He was a game manager, but they weren't relying upon him to actually win football games for them.
Right.
I mean, if you go back to, I believe it was the South Carolina game, they just lined up in the Wildcat, and Mark Ingram closed the game out on the ground because they couldn't trust him to make any plays in that game. Mm. And so that lets you know all you need to know about your quarterback if you're trying to preserve a win, and you take him off the field to preserve that win.
Yeah. Well, I think we all agree that Greg McElroy.
you don't even need to ask nobody else.
Right.
Hey, man, really. that's what's funny, and that's what's crazy and kind of scary at the same time. What if at this time Nick Saban was like, you know what? I want to put up 40 points. I want a real quarterback with them running backs, with Julio, with this defense. Man, Alabama would have been putting up 99 points on people at this time, man.
But the thing is, though, if I can, because Greg McElroy, he wasn't like terrible. It was just like Javon said. He was average.
Right.
If you got to just pinpoint one thing, and then not one thing is not like the other here. It is Greg McElroy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No.
Right. Yeah. He was average, but everything else on the team was exceptional. So the one thing that's average is going to look bad compared to everything else.
Right. Yeah. Like, so echoing what you're saying, we're not saying Greg McElroy was trash. But if the question is, what was a weakness for this team? He was a weakness. Right. He wasn't trash, though, but he was a weakness. Because, I mean, the boys won it. So you're not going to win it with a trash at quarterback. Mm-hmm. So. All right, so let's flip to this 99 Florida States with P. Dub now. With that receiving corps, Chris Winkie, what was the strength for this? Start with you, Doc. What was the strength for this 99 Florida State?
P. Dub.
P. W.
W. P. Dub. Listen.
Elaborate.
We're talking about. No, I ain't going to even say in my opinion. One of the best players that ever graced a collegiate football field, like ever. Like, you knew they was going to try to get him the ball, and they still couldn't do nothing about it. Yep. You couldn't do nothing about it. And he was never the fastest. He was never just going to jump over you. He just had the it factor. P-Dub was a generational talent in college. Like, he's one of those guys. When you bring up college football, for me, like, he's going in the one of the greatest of all time. It just is what it is. And, of course, we knew he would have got the Heisman if it wasn't for whatever, but we ain't going to go there. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's P-Dub. I'll let y'all pick something else. I'm going P-Dub.
P's and W's.
P's and W's.
What about you, Sam? Strength for this 99 Florida State.
Kind of similar to what I said for last week for the 2013 Florida State team was their approach or their attitude, man. I mean, because in the concept of, you know, how this team came about, they had a huge chip on their shoulder from the previous season when they went to because most of those guys was on the team when they went to the championship game against Tennessee. And lost to Tennessee when Winkie was hurt. So they felt like they went on a revenge tour. Mm-hmm. And they was like, everybody, we coming through, we got unfinished business, we know we good, and y'all finna find out what we about. And they had that mentality every game. Like I said, I think the first game was against like Louisiana Tech. Like it didn't matter if they was playing Louisiana Tech or if they was playing Florida. They was gonna come in there and do what they needed to do.
Yeah. 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 Hey. Yeah. What about you, Grant?
Yeah, similar to what Sam said, this was kind of a legacy year for Bobby Bowden because he only had that one championship with all the success that the program had, you know, dating back to the 80s. And everyone was certain that, you know, he was getting that second national championship to validate his career in 98. And then Chris Winkie got hurt. And everyone knew that Florida State was going to wipe Tennessee off the face of the earth if Chris Winkie wasn't hurt.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they came into the season like, we're going wire to wire. We preseason number one, and we're going to finish number one. And that was kind of the mantra for the team. And it played out in the field.
This was one of those classic Florida State teams. Mm-hmm. When I think about this team, the first thing I think about is that receiving core. Like last week, we talked about that Florida receiving core, that 96 Florida receiving core.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this receiving core is nice, too. Like, real, real nice. So, Peter Ward went to the lead. Ron Dugans went to the lead. Snoop Menace went to the lead. Anquan Boldin went to the lead. Talman Gardner went to the lead. Lavernius Coles went to the lead. And they still had Atrus Bell, Greg Moore, Robert Morgan, Jermaine Stringer. They still had them boys. They still had Travis Minor and Nick Maddox to be able to go out and be able to catch the balls. Like, this was one of the greatest receiving cores in the league. So, who was P-Dub, Ron Dugans, Lavernius Coles, and Snoop Menace was the starters, right?
Snoop was coming off the bench.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was the fourth receiver, though.
Yeah.
But I think Snoop was like, yeah. Right. But they still had Anquan Boldin and Talman Gardner that was on the team. Yeah. So this, we're talking about depth as well, because coming back that next season, when Anquan's the number one receiver. But then it's just like you said, P-Dub was otherworldly. But it's crazy because think about going to the next level, the career that Lavernius Coles had. Think about the career that Ron Dugans had. Then think about the career that Anquan Boldin had.
And he was better than all of them.
All of them.
Like, it wasn't even close. Like, it wasn't even close.
Like, Anquan's first year in the league just set the tone. Him and Fitz.
Mm-hmm.
It's over. Them boys is the duo. And it's crazy. So, when I think about 99 Florida State, bam, that receiving core is the first thing coming to my mind. All right, what about weaknesses? Start with you, Sam. What are weaknesses for this 99 Florida State?
Probably the running game. I mean, they had a running game that was, you know, it was complimentary. It was enough to get you by. But I don't think it was something that they was going to hang their hat on. Talking about it, though, is kind of almost like what we were talking about with McElroy. Like, they weren't bad at running the ball. You know, it's just that it was the lowest thing on what they did, because like when you think about that team, it was, you know, getting the ball in the hands of those playmakers on the outside, letting those guys, you know, finding who was one-on-one, and Chris Winkie, you know, dissecting it and getting the ball downfield. Like the running game was kind of like I said, just to keep teams honest.
Right. Right. What about you, Doc?
Yeah, I mean, really, when you look at it, you can't really pick nothing on the defense because they were stacked. The offense was stacked. I mean, really, like you said, bro, it really is. I mean, you just trying to find something here. If you just got to find something, it is a running game. You got Travis Monty and Dan Kendra in the backfield. Like, it really was a compliment. Like, it's just to say, oh, we got a running game. Just to say we need one, we got it. You know what I'm saying? It was nothing spectacular about him. You know, but don't get me wrong, Travis Minor could be a game breaker. Yeah, he could, you know what I mean? It's just like you're saying, bro. That running game wasn't as spectacular as a passing game. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's better than a lot of the rest of the countries. You know what I mean? So this right here, if you had to pick some, it would be the running game.
What about you, Ben?
Let's see. There was elite at quarterback, elite at receiver, elite at offensive line, elite at defensive line, elite at linebacker, elite at secondary, elite at kicker, elite at punt returner. So I guess the punter.
Right. If you got to pick some.
I guess we didn't have that great of a net punting average.
I'm finna pick some dumb shit. They had somebody named Cleavon. His name Cleavon. So that was a weakness. Cleavon. Not the player, but just the name. This was literally one of those teams where weaknesses didn't really exist because they played the way they played as a unit on both sides. Like Sam talked about the attitude. We talked about the talent across the board. I mean, shit, Dan Kendra was the fullback, bitch. Dan Kendra was probably the second best kicker in the nation, bitch. No, he went for quarterback, right? Yeah. Because Dan Kendra had an arm. And then Dan Kendra, he got hurt and he went to fullback.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like that's the kind of talent that they had. Anquan Boldin came in as a quarterback and will be inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame as a wide receiver. And they had P-Dub.
Yeah, just think about how elite their special teams was. You had Sebastian Janikowski, who was probably going to the NFL Hall of Fame as a kicker, and then Peter Warwick was your punt returner.
Yeah. All right. So, with that being said, 09 Alabama, 99 Florida State, they meet neutral field. Who winning? This is a good ass game.
Before we start, somebody hit me in the DM and said, "Man, y'all got a Florida State bias. We all know him. I ain't gonna call him out, but you know who you is, boy." You know who he is. He ain't like our pick last week with Florida State and whoever it was.
Over 96 Florida.
Yeah, he like, yeah. Hey, boy, you know who he is, boy.
Come on, bro. Come on.
But anyway, go ahead.
I know who you're talking about.
We all know him. Let me get it off. Anyway, go ahead, bro.
He was Doug Funny best friend.
Hey, man, go ahead, bro.
Hey, so, Grant, Florida State, 99 Florida State, 09 Alabama, they meet head up. Who win?
For me, it's going to be the 99 Florida State.
Why?
Again, you know, at some point, they're going to be able to bottle up Alabama's rushing attack because we were so stout on the defensive line. We didn't necessarily have to put eight in the box to be able to stop the run. And once that slows down, you know, is Greg McElroy going to be able to make enough plays throwing the ball to outscore Florida State? And, I mean, when you look at Greg McElroy, his junior season, I mean, he had 17 touchdowns and 4 interceptions.
Yeah.
They didn't play a lot of teams that made them throw the ball. So he didn't have to, but he's going to have to against Florida State. I just don't see him making enough plays as a quarterback to, you know, outscore Florida State.
That's a good assessment. That's a real good assessment on that. What about you saying they meet head up? They meet at Cox Field.
Yeah, I have to second that, man. He kind of laid it out. I mean, like, and if you look at, like, if you think about the 09 Alabama team, like what Javar was saying, Texas almost pretty much did that in that title game. They was limiting Mark Ingram, and
they almost came back.
You can't say what would have happened, but I mean, if Colt McCoy don't leave out that game, I mean,
I always thought Texas would have won.
So I mean, I kind of look at that would be kind of the thing that FSU would do. They would hone in on that running attack. And like Javar was saying, I mean, with Corey Salmon and clogging up the middle, I mean, they didn't even have to load up to stop
it. Right.
So if by chance, you know, they wanted to try to get the ball out to Julio, I mean, I don't know if they're going to be holding down that explosive offense. So I just see eventually the Florida State will be able to make enough big plays in the passing game to put too much pressure on Alabama to score.
What about you, Doc?
I'm going Alabama. I think I'm lying. They're not stopping that offense for one. You know, as stout as that 09 Alabama's defense was, I don't see them. That's just too much firepower. Then you had all American tackle and Talos Thomas, and people been forgetting, like, hey, that man was a man child. You know what I mean? So that's why Chris Winkie was able to stay upright all season. You know what I'm saying? Like, that offensive line protected Winkie. And with all the weapons outside, and, man, they're not stopping this team. Like, and defensively, just if you go down and look at that depth chart on 99 Florida State defense, it is crazy. Like, just like Sam said, you got Jamal Reynolds, Corey Simon, Roland Seymour. Then you got Tommy Pollard, Bradley Jennings, Tay Cody, Mario Edwards, bro. That's them boys was locking everything up. You know what I mean? That Florida State 43, Alabama 12.
Yeah. Hey, field goals.
Hey, this not. I don't think that's
field goals. I mean,
because Julio Young on that team, ain't he?
He's a sophomore.
We dogging sophomore Julio.
So y'all made good assessments. But the first thing pop out in my mind, I would say Florida State would win because if it's a close game, what's always been Alabama's Achilles heel? Field goals. That's always been Alabama's Achilles heel. And Florida State got Sebastian Janikowski, who's arguably the greatest kicker ever. So if it come down to the come down, I don't trust an Alabama team to make the game win the field goal. Yeah, they got highlight reels. Goddamn, all bring out highlight reels off that shit. Yeah. Where Alabama missing field goals. So if it come down to that, and then I think about, well, who would stop Julio? Julio would still get his. Now, a sophomore Julio, I don't expect a sophomore Julio to do with a junior Julio, but Julio would get his. But so would P-Dub, so would Lavernius, so would Ron Dugans, so would Snoop. And I feel like Florida State's offense would overwhelm Alabama's defense after a while. And then thinking about it, Chris Winkie, who do I trust more? Chris Winkie or Greg McElroy? Come on, man. Chris Winkie.
What year was Winkie's Heisman?
The next year.
So, Winkie like 20, 25 at this time. But it's just thinking about that, because the Alabama team is great, is nice, it's stacked, it's stout, all that. But comparing it to this 99 Florida State, Nick Saban not going to out-coach Bobby Bowden. Bobby Bowden not going to out-coach Nick Saban. So I see, you know, it's kind of even right there. But just on the field, I trust Winky more than I trust McElroy. I think Winky going to make more plays. Florida State has a group of receivers that you got to stop versus Alabama having one. So let's key in on Julio, stop the run. Make Greg McElroy and other people beat you. Yes, Alabama has a nice defense, but can Alabama's defense over the course of four quarters really be able to contain that Florida State offense? So that's why I would give it to 99 Florida State. It just, to me, I think they just got too many athletes. So, yeah. All right, so that's where we at. All right, so, well, y'all know. You got to go look at the charts, man. Look at these numbers. See what we got. All right. So, of course, y'all know we're using the criteria of margin of victory, number of All-Americans, total defensive rankings, number of players drafted, and total offensive rankings. So, 09 Bama, 99 FSU. So, margin of victory, Alabama's is 27.8. Florida State's is 21.3. So, Alabama get the nod in margin of victory. Number of All-Americans, Alabama has 5 consensus and 6 total. Florida State has 4 consensus and 4 total. So Alabama get the nod and all number of All-Americans. Total defensive rankings, Alabama is the number 2 ranked. Florida State's the number 19 ranked. So Alabama get the nod, total defensive rank. Number of players drafted, Alabama has 26. Florida State has 23. Alabama get the nod and number of players drafted. Total offensive rankings, Alabama is 42nd and Florida State is 8th. So Florida State get denied in total offensive rankings. So as far as total offensive rankings for Alabama, they 32.1 points a game, which is 21st in the nation. Total yards per game, 403, which is 42nd. Pass yards per game, 187.9, which is 92nd. And rushing yards per game, 215.1, which is 12th for Florida State. Points per game, 37.5, which is ranked number 4. Total yards per game, 425.7, which is ranked 8th. Passing yards per game, 302.9, which is ranked 12th. And rushing yards per game, it's 122.8, which is ranked 83rd. So, according to our numbers, Alabama get denied a margin of victory, number of All-Americans, total defensive rankings, number of player drafted, while Florida State get the nod in total offensive rankings. So 09 Alabama actually moves on to the next round. Go ahead, get it out.
I was just waiting on Doc.
Go ahead, get it out. Let him have it.
It's a numbers podcast, bro.
Hey, we got criteria, man.
I'm just numbers never lie, Doc.
Bruh, yes, they do, man. Hey, we're going to stick to the number, dog.
Hey, I'm not changing what I said. I still think if 99 Florida State meet 09 Bama on the field, they would win. But we set the criteria for a reason to take out our biases. So, you know, I'm still not changing the way I think.
I just think it shows how good Nick Saban and Alabama are, because it's the second time where we had an Alabama team where you kind of think that it's I don't want to say underwhelming, but you don't really realize how good they were until you look at the stats and it's like, dang, they was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even with time passed, you forget how good they were. Like, living in the moment, you were like, man, that team's crazy. But then, you know, we're talking about 11 years, 12 years later almost, whatever. It's like, you forget, like, the impact they had in that year. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's partly a part of that. It's easy to forget how good those teams were. Especially, like you said, the start of that, like, yeah, them. I remember them being really good, but I still don't care nothing about that.
Forget you numbers, even though we put you in. Forget, forget the numbers that we put in, sucker ass numbers. Hey man, not but y'all right though, like the Nick Saban teams. Now, no, like I say, my bias, I'm not even gonna lie. This 99 Florida State team is one of them teams that I have a straight bias for. 01 Miami, 96 Florida, 99 Florida State. I have real strict biases for these teams. These are teams that I was just heavily invested in. So it'd be hard for me to really go against these teams if you really ask me about it. So that's why we do it how we do it. So, all right. Well, it is what it is. I ain't gonna lie. I don't like this shit. I don't like that shit.
When we started this whole podcast, I definitely didn't imagine a scenario where Florida State, 99 Florida State, was going out in the first round.
Out of here. 09, out of here.
Right. Yeah. People are going to be looking at this. They're going to be mad. Hey, man, it is what it is. That's why we do. Just keep watching. We got some more shit to make you mad. All right. So, let's migrate to our second matchup where we got 2004 USC and 1987 Miami. And we're going to have to take a jog down memory lane for this 87 Miami. But so let's start with 04 USC. Let's start there. So I'm going to start with you, Sam. Strengths for this 04 USC team.
The defense, man. I mean, when people think about USC, I think a lot of people think about, especially in that era, the first two names that pop up is Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart. But the thing I think that people forget is that Pete Carroll he got that job because of what he did in the NFL as an elite defensive coordinator. So when he got the USC, he put together a defense that was fast, aggressive, and they was going to hit you in the mouth and they was going to defend much like, I mean, it's kind of almost like the what you see with the Seattle teams that he goes now. They defend every piece of the field. Nothing's easy. So that was the thing that I think when I think about those USC teams, that's the thing that pops in my head as the thing that strikes me first.
So speaking of that, they have 8 players off that team who were drafted into the league. So that's a good assessment that ain't nobody, no people don't give a shit about USC defense. They don't.
Basically.
So all right. So what about you, Doc?
Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush.
See.
I mean, it is what it is. We watch ESPN and every sports highlight show every day, and all they show was Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, and sprinkle a little Lindell White in there and Steve Smith. Bro, that's all they show, left and right, and it dominated that season in college football, bro. Just like you talking about Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush. We're talking about two Heismans, right? Like, that's in the same backfield. How often do you get that? So, and then to say, like you said, with Pete Carroll, that team was dynamic. You know what I mean? And it was hard to see anybody beating them because it felt like a track meet. It looked like a track meet with them guys out there, man. Them boys was loaded, and against the defense was great. But I mean, if you don't remember 04 season, just watching every time you get on, they brought up USC with Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush. They used to show Reggie Bush doing backflips all over the place, stuff we ain't never seen before. I was like, man, this is crazy. What they found this dude at? But that's what I remember. So just calling it like it is, bro.
I mean, say Sam trying to be all astute.
Hey, now, look at the scores. Now, they had like four shutouts, bro.
Hey, that shit's just so funny. What about you, Jabbar?
I mean, for me, it was a, it's a similar thing to that 99 Florida State team. USC in 2003, USC was AP number one, but they ain't playing the championship game because they had to go play in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
And they got that split national champion. And, you know, of course, LSU wasn't giving them any credit because they actually played in the championship game. Mm-hmm. And so they had something to prove coming to the season. And, you know, they Hollywood as hell out there in L.A. And so they got – they just had that super swagger coming into the season. And we get, they was going to show y'all what was really about out there on the West Coast. And it played out throughout the year.
Damn, so it did. So, for me, it was coaching. I did like their receivers. And just in addition to what you all said, I'm not saying opposite, but in addition to what y'all said, coaching, Steve Smith, Dwayne Jarrett, and I like Lindale White. I like that what Lindale White brought to the offense as a running back, because at a point it was, all right, between him and Reggie, which one you going to stop? Mm-hmm. They both in the backfield, which one you going to stop? One of them you can't tackle because he's too strong. The other one, you just can't grab him, so you can't tackle him. So which one? We're going to bust you in your mouth with Lindale. We're going to bust you in your mouth with Lindale, get all these grunge yards, and then we're going to either – we're going to throw it to Steve Smith, to Wayne Jarrett, and then when we really want to just make you feel bad, we're going to give it to Reggie. And it's just like they had all these options coming from Matt Liner. So it's just – so just like I say, in addition, yeah, two stout receivers – who can get the job done, because Steve Smith had a pretty decent career in the league. Dwayne Jarrett, I can't really remember. I forgot what happened with Lindale, but at USC in the role that – well, yeah, that's right. He did get fat. He did get fat. How many yards did Lindale have? He had 1,000. Yeah, 1,000 yards that year. So
– as the backup.
Right. 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 And so, according to this, he actually outrushed Reggie Bush. Reggie Bush had 908 yards. Lindale White had 1103.
Reggie had more all-purpose than him.
Yeah. Because, you know,
Bush was the feature. Yards. Bush was more the feature that next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, yeah. So, that's the first thing that jumped out to me is, like, strengths for this team in addition to what y'all said. Coaching. Because Pete Carroll, I mean – he did an excellent job. So Pete Carroll, the receivers, and Lindale White. So, Doc, what about these weaknesses for this 0-4 team?
Man, honestly, I don't really remember too much about a weakness for this team. I guess more so because I didn't watch them other than outside of, you know, like their highlight games. But I really don't remember too much about their weaknesses, to be honest with you.
All right. None.
Yeah, I don't know what was exposed other than, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
What about you, Sam?
Really, their only weakness was Reggie Bush stepdaddy taking these checks for this rental house, man. That's the only thing.
Oh, stepdaddy. Hey, that's funny as hell. That is fun.
That's the only thing I can really think of, man, because like Doc saying, I mean, you didn't watch him a lot. You saw the highlights. But even just looking at the rosters and the number, the looking at the season summary, I mean, like, it wasn't really anything they couldn't do. I mean, like, the receivers, the quarterback was great. The offensive line was massive. And talented defensive line had guys getting drafted. Secondary had guys getting drafted. Linebackers had guys getting drafted. So, yeah, that was the only thing I could say was like the cheating NCAA.
What about you, Grant?
I guess if I had to say something as a weakness, you know, it would be occasionally they did play down to some of their competition. because they, I mean, they knew that all they had, all they had to do was roll the ball out there and they was going to win. Mm-hmm. But, you know, late in the season, you might be on the road against, you know, some unranked team, and you kind of just go through the motions of the game.
Mm-hmm. They had a couple close games.
You know, you're going to end up with more points at the end of the day. Right. Other than that, not a whole lot I can say or can find as a weakness.
Right. Now, yeah, I see, because this Oregon State game and this UCLA game, they should have blew the doors off them boys. So, I guess that mustard yellow they wear in their uniform. Because it's close to the Washington Redskins yellow, so I don't like it. That's the weird.
Trying to find something, huh?
Yeah, bitch. Yo, ugly ass yellow and mustard, Heinz mustard pants, face ass boys. Like, this was one of those teams, man. And because Reggie Bush was one of those players like P. Dub.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a small like category of players, because like Barry Sanders is in here. Mm-hmm. And you got P. Dub and Reggie Bush.
I throw Percy Harvin in there. At the collegiate level, if he got his hands on the ball,
yeah,
in the open field.
I agree, man. Because, I mean, I know this is off topic, but, like, people think when those Florida teams, you think about Tim, people think about Tim Tebow. I was way more scared of Percy Harvin than I was of Tim Tebow.
Right.
I agree. But I feel like he looking inside of that he at the window, like.
That's where I'm at. Because it's
I feel you, Grant, but I feel like he like looking in.
Almost. Like he like almost.
He got the address.
They got the window open and he's smelling the pie.
Yeah, yeah. He got the key in the house, but he got the address. He know where y'all live, but he can't get in.
He outside the club and they looking for his name on the list.
Yeah, he outside.
When Peter Warren come up, they just wave him into the building.
Hey, oh yeah, come on in, bro.
He's standing over the line. Take his name.
I feel you though, bro.
Yeah. Nah, but I mean, and there's no slight to Percy. Percy was ultra dynamic. I thought he was the best player on that offense, but. It's just, I think those players had a little extra something that Percy didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay. So, all right. Let's put on our old man hat back when we was 3 years old. So, what would it? Let's start with you, Grant, with strengths for this 87 Miami team.
Jimmy Johnson. He had the best coach in college football, had the best wide receiver in college football.
Hey, there you go. If you don't know, now you know. Jimmy with that hair.
And this was one of the first college football teams that bullied their opponents on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so they was out there trying to hurt you and trying to embarrass you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone else is trying to play football. Miami was not.
Mm-hmm.
They were 21 shitting people.
But, well, they was out there playing bus beat.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Sam? A strength for this 87 Miami team.
Strength, man, just their attitude, man. They had, I mean, it was the start of the swagger. I mean, like, they started it, man. I mean, so is that's it. Is they had a way. I mean, people hated them and they fed into that. And then on the field, people was afraid of them. So I think that was their main strength, just their attitude and that boisterousness.
Yeah. What about you, Doc?
Man, just looking, honestly, looking at the roster, I mean, like you said, bro, we was kids, you know what I mean? So for us, it was really like a reach. But just looking at the roster, there are very familiar names on this team that, you know, we might not even know of, like Cortez Kennedy and Russell Maryland, Benny Blaze, like them guys, we know them names, you know what I'm saying? But I think as a combination between what they both were saying, like this was the start of what we know as the U, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That swagger, that, you know, that domination, that confidence on the field. This is where it started. And along with having Jimmy Johnson and that who pretty much brought in that whole attitude to that team, like even just going back and looking at it, you could tell what we knew at the pinnacle of what the U was, where it started at. You know what I'm saying? So I think a part of even having all these guys we may or may not be familiar with, they ushered in what we understand as what the U is. You know what I mean? So I think that was their biggest strength. Like they ushered the U in, the U.
Man, these boys punter went to the league. They got their punter. So I agree. Now, they made a two-part 30 for 30 series on the U, and this team had a big part in that, like what they brought to the field. We talking about back when Michael Irvin was putting his hand in the dirt, but I'm just looking at, they had like Jeff Figgles at punter. Benny Blaze was he helped set that attitude that Ed Reed played with, that Sean Taylor played with, because Benny Blaze played like that. And then, like you said, there, Michael Irvin, Brian Blaze, the brother Benny Blaze, they went to lead. Brett Perryman, Andre Brown, Dale Dawkins, they all went to lead. Both their tight ends went to the lead. Like their running backs, they had 1, 2, 3, 4 running backs to go to the lead. Alex Johnson, Cleveland Garrett, Warren Williams, Melvin Bratton. And then their quarterbacks were Steve Walsh, backed by Craig Erickson. Both went to the lead. They were stacked. So in addition to that swag, they had depth. They had real NFL talent on the field with this 87 Miami team. And they were taking no prisoners, man. So that's what I would say would be a strength that I can remember or even that I researched about the team. All right, so start back with you, Doc. What are some weaknesses with this team?
What is that? Mike Irvin had his hand in the dirt.
Hey, Doc, that's how all the receivers played back then.
Bro, it's just funny.
That shit is funny, Doc. See Mike Irvin playing with a hand in the dirt. Because we knew about Cowboy Mike Irvin first.
Bro, it's just funny to see, bro. Hey. A weakness, man, I don't know. Mine was three. I don't know, bro. Wait, go to hey.
hell. Who do know? Shit, I don't know either. What about
you, Seth? I mean, the weakness was a wide receiver wearing number 47.
Y'all stupid. Hey, bro. I thought you were going to say snow seas.
Oh, hey, he did. Hey, he was out there balling on the man wearing number 47.
I was like, why is a backup safety playing quarterback playing wide receiver?
Oh, man.
Hey, that was part of his genius, bro. Like, they was all like, hey, man, this dude got on number 47, man. What he going to do? And next thing you know, he was McBound.
Right. I always wonder how you catch top speed coming at that 3-point like that as a receiver. Run that slant.
Oh, man.
Nah, that's funny, man. Y'all stupid, man. I don't know. I don't really know either. I guess looking at it, I saw they had a couple close games. So
yeah. Hey, I tell you weakness, bro. What was the dude name? Nevin Shapiro.
That was their weakness. Yeah. Yeah. He was like Reggie Bush, uncle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Messing up stuff.
Everybody.
He made a damn documentary too, man. But now,
like, him and Uncle Luke.
Right. You had to put Luke in there. But see, that's one of the, I guess. See, we can't really think of strengths. I mean, weaknesses. We ain't gonna lie. We can't really think of them. But going back to a strength, this team created a culture. Mm-hmm. Think about what we're talking about with Uncle Luke, Nevin Shapiro, just all of the just everything that was surrounding this team. They created a culture, just not only by the way they played football, but just how they live their lives off the field. They live with intention and purpose the way that they got down. And that's why they were busting people in the mouth. And that's why they won everything. So what time for the UE on?
Yeah, it really is. Just if I can say one thing, it really is one of those teams that's like, you can't tell the history of college football without talking about this team and that whole Miami. Because like, in a lot of ways, like shoot, the guys you see what they do on Saturdays now, they still emulating that stuff that they did.
Yep. So, all right, so. 04 USC, meet 87 Miami, neutral field, head up one game. Who win? Start with you, Doc. Who win? 04 SC, 87 Miami.
04, speed different. and it's just because I feel like the speed is different. You know what I'm saying? Now, I could be way off here, but just the first thing that pop in my head is, you know, I think a lot of times, too, we like to compare – like the more modern teams versus teams of the past, I think where the difference becomes in is speed, strength, and stuff like that. Like those teams were good, don't get me wrong. And like I said, I could be way off, but in my mind goes straight to speed. I'm like, how do they keep up with like that team? Like your linebackers got to run side to side with Reggie Bush. Like, I don't know how they keep up with them guys. You know what I'm saying? So, that in my mind, I just don't see them keeping up with that team. And I could, like I said, I could be way off, but I don't see
it. Nah, that's a good assessment. I mean, it's what you're thinking about. Because you do have to consider that. Think about the state of training facilities from 87 to 04.
Mm-hmm.
Shit is totally different. Exercises are totally different. Hell, the training facilities from 04 to now are totally different.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so I can understand that. What about you, Grant?
For me, you know, both teams had, you know, really good defenses, really good head coaches, really good special teams. I think the biggest difference is probably at the quarterback position. I feel like Steve Walsh was maybe just on the bus, as opposed to Matt Leinart. He was driving the bus. And I would trust him to go win games before I trust Walsh to go win games.
So right.
I'm rolling with 04 USC.
04 SC. What about you, Sam?
Yeah, I got to agree. I mean, it's hard to put a team, you know, that's from that era up against, I mean, even not even, because I mean, 04 is not even, they still not even playing like they playing, like the guys playing now. But it's just hard for me to see a team coming in and seeing a team like a team from 1987 playing a team from, because like, if you look at just, like Doc was talking about the speed, but then if you look at the guys' stats, I mean, like, you had linebackers playing for Miami that was, you know, playing. They playing weight was, like, 210 pounds. That's linebackers. USC got safeties that weigh that. And then, you know, these guys finna meet finna meet Lindell White in the hole. He went about 240 as a running back. You know, they didn't see anything like that. So I mean, it's hard to overlook those kinds of things when you're talking about a team, one team from that era and a team from you know, a more modern team.
Nah, I get you. I'm gonna go with 87 Miami just so we can have jokes. No, I'm just playing. Now, I mean, to be honest, like I think this 87 Miami team is an ultra talented team. But listening to what everybody's saying, I can't ignore that. That's information that I cannot ignore. Because hell, I even said it. Training facilities are different now than it was then. I think Michael Irvin would probably still get his if Steve Walsh could get the ball off. Because that's a great assessment. Matt Leinart is way better than Steve Walsh. It's not even close. It's not even close. And though they had all this talent, now I think the Blades boys would do their thing, but size does matter and speed does matter. Reggie White would go crazy. I mean, Reggie Bush would go crazy on the team. Like he would. Lindell White would get his. He weighed 240. He would get his. So, and, you know, because, you know, when you have conversations with older men who play football, and when you talk to that man, he a good size man, but he ain't no big man. And you ask him what position he played. Oh, yeah, I played guard. And you were smaller then. You played guard. So you do have to take that into account. So just being real with myself, because I'm not going to lie, like, I want to go with 87 Miami. I want to say that 87 Miami would win this matchup, but realistically, I don't think that would happen. I think it would. I do think 87 Miami is better than a lot of – I do want to say this. We're not downing them, because I think they're better than maybe even we think, or even a lot of people think. That team is way better than that. But just matching up with this team with all the different elements that go into it, I would still have to give that edge to 87 Miami. I mean, to 04 USC. I would have to give it to them. So, but
it's
I don't.
It's hard because, like you said, bro, like in 87 Miami is as good as 87 Miami can be in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, and the same for 04. And it's like a time period game. It's just like saying putting Braun back with Wilt Chamberlain and them. You know what I'm saying? Or putting whoever, right? And put Jim Brown in the game right now. It's hard because you can only be as good as you can with all things considered, with the training facilities you have, whatever's available to you at that time and whatever the time calls for. So this is one of those games. It's like, it's hard to match them up. It's very hard to match them up on the field. Just optically, just thinking about that, it's hard to just say 04 is going to be 87 in a game. You know what I mean? But you can only go off the factors that you have in your head. And like I said, for me, it's speed. But it's still kind of a biasness to a modern-day game. Versus in reality, 87 at that time probably was a fast team in 87. Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. So this is a tough one. It's a tough one.
Yeah. Like I definitely don't want people to think. I'm going to say it again. I definitely don't want people to sleep on 87 Miami or even discredit or underrate them as a team, because they were a dominant team. They were ultra talented team, and they were busting people in the mouth because they knew they were going to win. Like, and that's what's great about this matchup between these two teams. Both teams came to the field knowing that they're going to win. It's just a matter of how much are we going to beat you by this week. So do want to put that out.
A lot of the attitude that USC had, like I said, with they emulating that kind of swagger that the 87 team, you know, started. Because before then, like you said, I mean, college football players, I mean, they didn't celebrate. they didn't, you know, they didn't celebrate when they scored a touchdown. They didn't pump up the crowd when they got a big hit. None of that stuff happened. It was, you know, like, oh, you know, let them jog back to the sideline.
Play the game the right way.
Right, exactly. But, you know, this 04 USC team, they had the same kind of swagger that 87 Miami team had.
Bruh. Want to look at the impact of 87 Miami. How many schools got their version of the turnover chain? And the turnover chain was brought back. The turnover chain was brought back to bring back the swag of this 87 team. Let's just be real with it.
Yeah.
So do want to get them that props. All right. So let's look at these numbers and see how these things match up. Because hey, we could be wrong. We were just wrong. So we could be wrong. All right. So once again, margin of victory, number of All-Americans, total defensive rankings, number of players drafted, and total offensive rankings are the criteria we're using. So margin of victory, USC is 26.3, Miami is 23.9. Number of All-Americans, USC has 4 consensus and 6 total. 87 Miami has 2 consensus and 5 total. Total defensive rankings, USC is ranked 3rd, Miami is ranked 2nd. Number of players drafted, USC has 30, Miami has 28. Total offensive ranking, USC is 12th, and Miami is 6th. So as far as breaking down total offensive rankings, USC points per game, 38.2, which is 6th. Total yards per game, 449.1, which is 12th. Passing yards per game, 271.7, which is 14th. Rushing yards per game, 177.4, which is 33rd for Miami. Points per game, 34.3, which is 6th. Total yards per game, 409.8. Passing yards per game, 232.4. And rushing yards per game, 177.4. And so USC gets the edge and margin of victory, number of All-Americans, and total players drafted, while Miami get the nod in total offensive rankings and total defensive rankings. So that will give USC a 3-2 edge over Miami, and they move on to the next round. Are we satisfied with this one? Are we good with this one? 0-4 Miami get the they edged out the victory. Now, I want people to look to understand with these numbers. It wasn't looking at the numbers, it's not a blowout. So 87 Miami was like right there, looking at the numbers. Their numbers are comparable to 2004 USC. So that's just how good that damn team was. So, all in your mind. All right, so we good with that? Everybody good with it? Ain't no backlash, no front lash, no whiplash.
No lag.
There you go. All right, so that actually concludes our first round. So round two will be 2019 LSU versus 1995 Nebraska, 2012 Alabama versus 01 Miami, 2013 FSU versus 18 Clemson, and 09 Bama versus 04 USC. And we got them. Those are good matchups. Those are real, real good matchups that we got coming up. I'm excited about them. We in our Elite Eight, or we're going to call – we can't use Elite Eight. We'll call Extravagant Eight or – East Side 8 or whatever. Something with the 8s. God damn it. We got 8 teams left.
Grateful 8.
There you go. The Grateful 8. 8 D's. Oh, no, I can't say that. But.
You probably can't say Grateful either. Yeah, you can't say that either. You're right.
The Hateful 8. 8 grapes.
Can't say that either.
What's eating Gilbert 8? There you go.
Get away with that one.
We'll go with that one.
That was actually a good movie.
Yeah. Amazing, yeah. Gilman. All right, man. So next week gonna be real good. So next week gonna be real good. So we just make sure we got to plug in our numbers and everything so we can move on. So y'all make sure y'all tune in for next week's show. Like I said, 2019 LSU versus 95 Nebraska, 12 Alabama versus 01 Miami, 2013 FSU versus 2018 Clemson, 09 Alabama versus 04 USC. All right. So now it's time for us to transition on into that weekly rant. And this week, as I'm scrolling through all the sports stories, the one that stood out to me as the most egregious, and like, man, what the hell? So this is not me as a Cowboy fan. As a Cowboy fan, I'm glad he did it. His dumb ass. But as a football fan, and as a black football fan who want to see black quarterbacks succeed, I don't understand the move. And his explanation is bullshit. Smell like a bunch of bullshit, like the little boy said in the belly movie. So Doug Peterson is who I'm talking about. Doug Peterson, the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles or the Philadelphia Pigeons. They, in the fourth quarter of his game against, who were they playing?
The football team.
Oh, yeah, they're playing the Washington Mustard Pants. In a close game with a chance to win, Doug Peterson benched Jalen Hurts for Nate Studfield. Studfield, even worse. But Sudfield subsequently had an interception, and he ended up fumbling the ball, and that cost the Eagles the game. And everybody mad at Doug Peterson. You even had players who were ready to put hands on Doug Peterson for that move that he made. So when you all first heard that this happened, and I start with you, Grant, when y'all first heard this happen, what were some of the initial thoughts that went through your mind about this whole decision that Doug Peterson decided to make?
Well, first of all, I had Jalen Hurts as my fantasy quarterback. My starter was Patrick Mahomes, but he got benched by Andy Reid. So I was upset because I was needing them points. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, I ended up with enough points. That was the first thing that went through my mind. And the second thing was, I just assumed that this was something that management wanted him to do so they can get a better draft pick, because winning the game wasn't really going to help Philadelphia anyway. It's not like they had the opportunity to, win the division that night. It was just Washington and Dallas and I guess the Giants, since the Giants had won that game. It was just those two teams who really were concerned about the outcome of the game. And so, I mean, they've seen all they need to see from Jalen Hurts. And so as a spectator, I wasn't all that upset with what they did. But from the player's perspective, I can see why they're mad, because they want to win games. They want to put stuff on film. They're players who are fighting to be on teams next year, whether it's, you know, remaining with Philadelphia or, you know, getting or playing for another team next year. So that definitely has an impact. And when you're in the heat of battle, and you know, it's not like you're like Kansas City, who know where their destiny lies as far as the playoffs is concerned. When you're in the heat of battle, you want to win. You want to have the best available players on the field to give you the best shot of winning. You're not concerned about, you know, all the things that's going on the outside and, you know, draft seeding and things of that nature. So I can understand, you know, the anger that was portrayed by some of the players.
Right, right. Nah, I get you. I get you. What about you, Sam? It's the first thing you thought when you heard it.
I just feel bad. I just feel bad for the player, the rest of the Eagles, man. I mean, because, like, you know, you hear a lot of talk in sports nowadays about, like, tanking and stuff like that. And to me, football is the one sport you cannot tank. You cannot tank. Just because the guys is playing, they put in so much on the line. They put so much in to win each game. It's so hard. I mean, like, I can't imagine going out there and, you know, putting my body on the line and the team behind me, not the players on the field, but the upper management, they don't even want to win. Mm. It would be hard for me to have to keep having respect for the organization at that point. So I just thought about them. Because, like, and then, like Javar was saying, I mean, you got guys like, yeah, okay, yeah, the season, they're not going to make the playoffs, but that's that can still affect them if they don't perform well in that particular game. Because, like, yeah, like, coach is going to be looking at that tape and looking at how you perform. And if you playing with, and like, football being such a team game, if you playing with subpar players, that can make you look bad. So, yeah, like I said, I just felt for the other players, man, because it, like I said, it looked like they threw the game. That it just looked like they threw the game to try to, because I think it was they got from, if they lost, if they won, they would have had the 10th pick, but since they lost, they're gonna have the 6th pick. So it looked like they threw the game.
Bro, it wasn't just Jalen Hurts. There were other players who were put into the game that weren't starters.
Mm-hmm.
So Harris is just, you know, the headliner.
Right. But is Carson Wentz like incapacitated?
No, I don't think he incapacitated. They don't believe in him no more.
Is Carson Wentz made the executive choice that he wasn't going to play backup?
And whatever, Carson, whatever, you know. But now, because I'm just thinking, Nate Sudfeld.
And Nate Sudfeld been there for how long?
Like 5 years.
And that was my issue with it. I'm like, after he came out with that BS statement, like he wanted Nate to get his snaps or whatever. He felt like he wanted to get a look. I'm like, he been there for 5 years, and how many more snaps you need to know? He ain't the guy.
You ain't never tried to play.
They know they not gonna. They know that Nate Sudfeld is not gonna be a long term NFL quarterback.
Well, and I think that was even more a part of my biggest issue. I was like, well, if Jalen's done everything he needed to do, he was in a quarterback battle after Carson Wentz proved that. All right. He just ain't Carson Wentz who we thought he was, or Carson Wentz who he's been proven to be in previous years before he got hurt. And Jalen has earned the right to be on the field. Y'all in a game, y'all can win. I don't care if you are out of playoff contention. Like Sam said, these guys going out there putting their bodies on the line. They putting so much on the line. And for you to throw this man in the game and then get that BS – statement about why you did after the game, bro, that's a slap in the face. That's not only a slap in the face to Jalen, that's a slap in the face to all of them other guys who went out there with the intentions of, hey, not only am I coming out here to play with my brothers and we're going to win this game, I expect my management, the administration, everybody to have that same mindset. But when you do that, like Sam said, bro, that changes a lot. I don't care what and who you are on the depth chart. If you playing for a team you don't trust to do the right thing, even if you are in, you like you said, you not playing to be in the playoffs or whatever, you still going out to play the game. That's going to change some things. It's a lot of guys in that locker room, I can promise you, they looking real side-eyed at them guys.
No, bro. Well, they said, who were the players? Let me bring this back up.
I know one of the linemen was like, bro, what's going on?
Yeah, so they say two starters on offense, including center Jason Kelce, asked Peterson why he was making the switch. Said two members on the Eagles defense had to be held back from approaching the head coach. So some of the like you said, he wanted to get Sudfeld some work. That's what he said.
That's what practice for.
Right. You don't get this motherfucker some work in the fourth quarter of a 6-point game that you have a chance to win. And when you have a rookie quarterback who hasn't played that much, and yes, all right, Jalen Hurts, looking at the stat, Jalen Hurts had on thrown for like 72 yards during his course, but still, he's a rookie, having a rookie game. Let him work it out. If you lose, you still lost. You still lost. So fall on your sword.
And it ain't so much about how like Jalen Hurts, how good or not he was, but he gives you the better chance to win in Sudfield. Right. So it's like that's the main thing. I mean, like I could see if they had put if Wentz was available, they went back to Wentz. It was like, okay, right.
Hurts, that's why I asked that question.
Right. Hurts ain't got it tonight. Let's see if Wentz can give us a spark. That makes sense.
Right.
But to put in a guy that you know for probably may not even be in the league next year. I mean, come on, man.
But I mean that was mine, but it's like also looking at it, okay. You have a rookie quarterback, and how does this actually help the confidence of the rookie quarterback, not just with himself, but with you, coach, and the organization? Because, okay, so we trying to lose. So I was listening to the radio, and somebody was saying that one of the speculations was the Eagles lost on purpose so the Giants wouldn't make the playoffs. Because if the Eagles would have won, then the Giants would have made it. And so – whatever, man. But the object is to go out there and win. You want to prove if look, you're not trying to have the number one draft pick. You're not trying to be that team, unless it just by circumstance, by trades and stuff, you get the number one draft pick. But the object is supposed to go out there and win. And the manner in which they went about doing things to end the season was stupid. Whether it came from management, from Doug Peterson, from Rocky Balboa, from a Philly cheesesteak, I don't care who it come from. It was stupid.
Yeah.
And you have to let your rookie quarterback go out. And if y'all going to lose with your rookie quarterback, not with some washed up dude that y'all keep on the roster for some reason.
Yeah, let Carson do it. The only reason he got replaced because he got hurt.
And the reason why I think that this was not Doug Peterson's call, because Doug Peterson is clearly not the one who's in charge. Because if somebody like Mike Tomlin or Andy Reid or Bill Belichick made this decision, players ain't coming up trying to fight him.
Mm.
Fight those coaches.
True.
But they're trying to fight Doug Peterson, that means Doug Peterson ain't in charge. That means he was doing what he was told to do, and he's the one who had to stand in front of that microphone and make up the reasons why they put that quarterback in the game and why they put those linemen in the game.
Yeah. It's stupid, man. It was a stupid decision. But one thing I hate worse than the stupid decisions is the half-assed lies that they expect us to believe like we stupid. I want to get Sudfield some work. No, you didn't. No, you didn't, bitch. You don't believe in Sudfield. Nobody believes in Sudfield.
Sudfield snaps in practice.
Sudfield ain't never got look, Sudfield ain't been good since elementary. All right. But y'all got I'm not saying he ain't good enough to be like a third string quarterback. But what we know he ain't good enough to be is a starter in the league. So there's no reason to say we need to get this buddy some work. You already know he ain't talking about nothing. That's why if Sudfield was good, Jalen Hurts wouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just be real. Jalen Hurts is there because Sudfield, it ain't like y'all did the Green Bay pick and just picked somebody.
Yeah.
Y'all intentionally drafted Jalen Hurts because y'all like, we don't really believe in Carson Wentz like that. And then Carson Wentz this year showed y'all that he is what Shannon Sharp called him, old walkie to him. Right? So, I mean, Douglas. Come on, man. Come on, bro. Now, the cowboy in me, like, keep doing that shit. Keep doing that dumb shit. Keep doing that as a cowboy, but as a football fan. Yeah. So, all right. So, is Doug Peterson Philly's coach next year?
Yeah.
He won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And won that long ago.
Yeah, he ain't going nowhere.
And they know they got to flip their whole roster. So the people who they think isn't going to listen to the coach, they're just going to get them up out the paint.
He's 22 and 25 as a coach. That's his record with the Super Bowl win. So Super Bowl win probably getting, what, one more year? Two more years?
I guess it just depends upon what direction they go at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
How long?
Yeah, that's what it is.
how promising this year looks. Like you would get 10 wins. If they get 8 to 10 wins, I think they're still in their mind. They're like, all right, well, if it's Jalen back there, if it's Carson, I think Carson might be out of there.
Because if you get 8 wins with Jalen Hurts next year, I mean, you doubled your output from this year.
That's what I'm saying.
Improved.
Yep.
And the way this division is, 8 wins might win you the division next year. Mm-hmm. And you're definitely not going to be tired if you win the division.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the division straight trash. Like, straight trash this shit. Like, that's the thing about NFC East, man. The NFC East, 1 year, I'll be the best division in football, and then the next 3 years it'd be hot trash. Then to come back and be the best division, then to go be hot trash. And like, make your goddamn mind to have some consistency, East.
Yeah, I mean, even if Dak Prescott didn't get hurt, this team probably would have still been the fourth seed if they won the division.
Yeah,
right. I don't think the Cowboys would have been, you know, significantly better. They definitely wouldn't have been the number one seed.
Yeah.
I think they might would have gotten to 8-8
with that. With Dakota. And yeah, but hey, I ain't gonna lie though. I'm mad the Cowboys, this part of their rant too. I'm mad the Cowboys lost to the goddamn Giants. We're supposed to win. Why we lost, Doc? Tell me, Doc. 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 Doc.
It's the Cowboys.
Hey, nah, dog. What made me mad too? I go to the corner store. Dude in the corner store got his hands up in the air like this. What happened?
Shut up, dude. The Cowboys know how to lose, bro. I don't care what, they know how to lose.
I had to hit him with our favorite offseason song. We're going to the Super Bowl next year. So, hey.
Why did Andy Dalton just throw it into the end zone on third down?
It's Andy Dalton, dog. It's the Red Rocket. That's what they call him, right?
Red Rocket.
All right, then. All right.
Some people call him.
What you call him?
The Red Pistol.
what's the most inaccurate gun? The Tommy gun, Ben?
Yeah.
That mustard,
man. Y'all stupid, man. All right, so that's our weekly rant. Wrap up this show. Quick recap. 09 Bama defeated 99 FSU. 04 USC defeated 1987 Miami. So round two started next week. And our, what I said for the eight? I don't know. We got 8 teams left, damn it. All right, so we got 2019 LSU versus 1995 Nebraska, which is going to be an interesting matchup. 2012 Alabama versus 01 Miami. 2013 FSU versus 2018 Clemson, and 09 Alabama versus 2004 USC. Nick Saban got 2 teams in the round of 8, man. Really going down, man. Hey, man. Y'all remember? Right. Oh, well, did you see the debate that they had? I like that Ryan Clark then brought up Eddie Robinson. I do like that. You got to give Eddie Robinson his props, even though he's not going to get his props because he coached black football. But you got to give him his props. All the wins that he had, 9 black college football championships. You got to give that man his props. Mm-hmm. But y'all make sure y'all like this video. Like the video. Comment, subscribe, share the video with your friends. If you disagree, put your disagreements in the comments. Just be cordial. Just be nice. Act like you got some home training. Some of y'all don't. We cool. But just don't comment if you like that. Let us know what's going on. You can support the Fix on Patreon at patreon.com/thefix. Support your homeboy. And if y'all want to see more of us four as a podcast, a sports podcast coming at you moving forward, man, y'all let us know, man, in the comments. Say what you want. If you want the four horsemen to come back at you, we got you. We the Ninja Turtles. So www.freedomtrainradio.com is the website. Remember, patreon.com/thefix. You can check me out. Subscribe, Freedom Train Network YouTube channel. We're on all podcast outlets. You can catch me on all podcast outlets and catch it right here on YouTube. And with that being said, I am Joseph Ward, and I can't do this without my homie Javard Grant, Sam Dixon, and Doc Love. Hey man, I love y'all boys. I appreciate y'all help with this because this shit is fun and funny, and y'all crazy. Y'all be influencing me to say crazy stuff. So now everybody know what my influence is like.
Live.
Hey man, we catch y'all on the flip side, man. Y'all be cool. Peace.